Now we turn to electors, as Democrats and Republicans in Wisconsin selected their slates of potential 2024 presidential electors last month in the run-up to Election Day.
This is a pivotal moment since 4 years ago, 10 Wisconsin Republicans declared themselves as electors for former President Donald Trump, filing paperwork falsely saying he had won Wisconsin.
We're taking a look at the role of electors and changes in state and federal laws since 2020 in the electoral process. Brenna Gadar is a staff attorney with the State Democracy Research Initiative at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Brenna, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the basic role of electors. They were pretty invisible, I think, in a lot of ways up till the last few years. We don't technically elect a president when we cast our popular vote. How do the electors fit into the whole equation?
That's correct. So when you're casting your vote for a candidate on the ballot, you're actually casting a vote for 10 presidential electors who are selected by the same party as that candidate. So, for example, the Democrats and Republicans have each selected a list of 10 electors who then will vote on December 17th for the candidate that wins. So, for example, if Harris wins, the Democratic electors will go to the Capitol on the 17th and cast their votes for Harris. And if Trump wins, the Republican electors will do the same thing.
And both parties did this last month. They chose their slate of electors. Does it work pretty much the same around the country, or are there variations from state to state when it comes to choosing those slates of electors?
There are variations state to state. Each state can determine how electors are selected. But in common, pretty much, they are all the political parties selecting those electors. The process of how that happens varies a bit. So in Wisconsin, it is state legislators, state office holders, and also candidates for those offices from each party gather to nominate electors. That's a little bit different from some other states where there is a state party convention or a state party committee that determines those electors. But in all states, pretty much, the electors are typically state and local officials, party leaders or activists, folks who the party knows will cast a vote for their candidate.
Now, most of the time, this is sort of a, abstract civics discussion. These things just kind of work automatically as far as voters can tell. Then came 2020, and Wisconsin was one of a handful of states where Republicans in states where they lost, these electors signed statements saying, yeah, we're the electors. The electors themselves said, well, it was just in case courts overturn things, but it ended up being part of a wider thing going on. Can you talk a little bit about the so-called a fake elector scheme?
Like you said, in 2020, when Biden won Wisconsin and a number of other battleground states, what that meant for Wisconsin is the Democratic electors met and cast their votes for Biden as required. But what happened with the fake elector scheme is the Republican electors who were not selected then also met and signed a certificate saying that Trump had won the state. And that was later used as part of an effort to overturn the election. But I think it is worth noting that it was not successful in 2020, and there are some additional safeguards in place in 2024 that would additionally protect against that being used to overturn an election.
Yeah, let's get to those safeguards. What kind of changes have we seen since that effort in late 2020, early 2021?
The biggest change is the Electoral Count Reform Act, which was a bipartisan piece of legislation at the federal level that really sought to address some of these weaknesses that we saw in 2020. And one of those changes is that Congress has to treat certifications from a state's governor as conclusive as to the result of the election, unless courts say otherwise. So what that means is there's sort of this step in this process where the governor issues a certificate with the results of the election in Wisconsin, and that sets the slate of electors who will be casting the valid votes. And so that means that Congress has to count the votes of the candidate who actually won the state and can't turn to sort of a fake certificate in order to overturn the results.
Are there other changes at that federal level that you see as significant in the process of going from Election Day to the electors signing that to Congress certifying those electoral slates?
Some of the changes involve sort of updated timelines and just making sure that there's an expedited process in federal court for resolving challenges or potential issues. And then the ECRA, this Electoral Count Reform Act, also really emphasizes that states have to appoint electors in accordance with state laws that were enacted prior to Election Day. So another thing that we heard about in 2020 was this idea that state legislatures could step in and override electors' votes. And the ECRA really says, no, you're not allowed to do that after the fact. You really have to stick with the laws that you had in place before the election.
We are talking about the role of electors in the upcoming presidential election with Brenna Gadar, staff attorney with the State Democracy Research Initiative at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Brenna, people may have seen headlines from around the country where the so-called fake electors, some of those Republicans who signed elector documents, were on the list of their party slate of electors again now in 2024. Not in Wisconsin, though. Why not?
That's correct. So in Wisconsin, there was a civil lawsuit, not criminal charges, but a civil case brought against the slate of 10 fake electors from 2020. And the electors settled that lawsuit in part. And part of that settlement was they agreed not to serve as presidential electors in 2024 or in any other election where Trump is on the ballot. And that settlement also included an acknowledgement that their actions were part of an effort to overturn Biden's victory and an acknowledgement that Biden did actually win in Wisconsin. And so as a result of that settlement, those fake electors won't be serving in 2024.
Another issue with electors over the years is a thought that, okay, so say I, Rob Ferret, end up on a slate of electors. I haven't and I won't. But if I did, and maybe I change my mind. You know what? I don't like my party's candidate when all is said and done. I'm going to switch my electoral vote. Some states have said, no, you can't do that, Rob. What is the state here in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin says you cannot do that. But this is something we have seen elsewhere. Interestingly, in 2020, there were no faithless electors, is sort of what that's referred to as. But in 2016, there were 7 faithless electors who cast their votes for somebody other than the party that had selected them or the candidate for whom they were supposed to vote. And Wisconsin law and a majority, I think nearly over two-thirds of states bind electors to vote in accordance with the state popular vote.
Every year we have a big presidential election, I always see articles from countries other than the U.S. who look and say, okay, well, wait a minute, somebody can win the popular vote but lose in the Electoral College, which has, of course, happened a couple times in the last couple decades. Why, the foreign observers ask, do you do that? So why? What's the reasoning behind having the Electoral College? And this goes back, obviously, to the founding.
Yeah, so it's definitely in line with how things were set up for representation of small states in particular. So the way the Electoral College breaks down is you get a number of electors based on your congressional delegation, which is for each state, you get 2 senators plus the number of representatives that you have in the House. And representatives are apportioned roughly based on population, but senators are not. So large states and small states alike have 2 senators. And what this means is the minimum number of electors you can have as a state is 3 electors. And this leads to major differences and disparities in population and sort of how much your vote counts toward each elector vote in different states. So for example, in Texas, California, Florida, New York, when you cast your vote, it's going to a much smaller share of elector votes than in smaller population states like Wyoming, Montana, or Rhode Island. And then the other piece of this is that most states distribute their electors on a winner-takes-all basis. There are only 2 states that will actually split up their electoral votes. That's Maine and Nebraska. And what this means is if the vote is very close in a state, like, for example, in Wisconsin, it was in 2020, all 10 votes are still going to one candidate. It doesn't get split up based on the proportion of votes that each candidate gets in the state. And that's where you can see the popular vote result being different than that Electoral College result.
Now, 2020, people saw in some ways as a stress test on our election system, the mechanisms from what happens from Election Day until that certification by Congress. You've mentioned some of the changes at the federal level to limit some of those efforts. What kind of things do you have your eye on in the event that a losing candidate wants to unlose. They want to try to change the outcome in states like Wisconsin.
One thing to watch is the recount process. We saw in the last two presidential elections recounts happening in Wisconsin. One change that happened in Wisconsin after 2016 is that you can only ask for a recount if you are within 1% of the leading candidate. So basically, you only get a recount if the results are pretty close, which was the case in 2020 and could very well be the case again in 2024. But I think it's worth emphasizing that there are a large number of procedures and detailed procedures in place, both for the initial ballot counting process and for the recount process, to ensure that we are getting the correct results reported and that those are the results that are ultimately getting certified by the governor and voted on by our presidential electors and going to Congress.
We focused mostly, of course, on Wisconsin here and changes in federal law. As we mentioned, the fake elector plot involved other states, battleground states around the country. Are there states you have your eye on when it comes to how they've handled the fake elector issue, whether through prosecution or civil lawsuits or some of those fake electors, as I mentioned, getting back on their slates of electors?
Yes. So in several states, there are criminal cases actively pending against fake electors. For example, in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, there's cases going on. But I think, and I should also say, and there are, like you said, I think about 14 fake electors serving again in various states. But some of those federal law changes should reduce the potential for negative fallout if those folks do decide to cast a fake certificate again in the event of a Harris win. I think the some of the other issues that folks are watching is just efforts to perpetuate claims of voter fraud in a way that has the potential to undermine confidence in the election. And incidents of voter fraud are incredibly low, but we are seeing, for example, in Georgia, a number of election administration policies and state officials sort of perpetuate the idea that voter fraud might happen. And that has the potential to lead to more uncertainty and unrest following the election.
Brenna, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Brenna Goddard is a staff attorney with the State Democracy Research Initiative at the University of Wisconsin Law School.
WPR will bring you live special coverage on election night. Join us Tuesday starting at 6. We'll share results and analysis from around the country and around Wisconsin. You'll hear updates on key races from WPR's own reporters and Rob Ferret.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's live coverage on election night here on WPR and online at WPR.org. Join us starting election night at 6.